Morning, morning, Will Robinson. Morning, morning. Rowan Connolly is in the building. Hello, Roco.
Hello, Kev. Hi, everyone. Why do you need to be warned when I'm...
You know, it's just that noise.
Very melodic noise, which is Alice in Chains, and people will be aware of that. That is Damn That River off the Dirt album, 1993.
Thank you. Welcome back to Eon FM. Now, listen...
Captain Carl. Let's get Captain Carl on again.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, the Port Adelaide have come out, they've got a $5,000 fine and a ban from round one for both Jarman Impey and for Aidan Johnson, who was a passenger in the car when it careered into three or four cars.
I probably haven't had time to think it through. Right off the top of my head, I would have thought that's...
From the leadership group, that is.
I would have thought that's reasonably lenient. There's a bit of a trail of destruction he left behind him, didn't he? And then he scarpered, and then they couldn't contact him for 5 hours.
Didn't the Brisbane player, didn't the Rising Star nominee do that down...
Lewis Taylor.
Yes, didn't he do that as well at one stage?
Yeah, he had a car incident.
Yeah.
I guess the leadership group sets the tone, so they're probably in a better place to do that. But I don't know. Off the top of my head, I would have thought Port Adelaide, where they're at now, they've been pretty disappointing the last couple of years. And I think, I'm not sure there's a great sort of, necessarily a great culture there. So I would have thought it would have been a good chance to really set a very strong example to a guy who's still trying to establish himself as an AFL player. I mean, the other side of the ledger is it's, you know, the start of December, so it's not like he's doing it mid-season, but I would have thought they would have wanted to make every post a winner, Port, and perhaps one game and $5,000's a bit light.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think, you go back and I'm reading James Button's book about Geelong, Comeback, it's called. Fantastic book.
Had him on.
It's a ripper book. It's one of the best footy books I've read. But just thinking about the Steve Johnson business there, and that really, I remember thinking at the time, gee, that's a bit heavy-handed. But I think
it was
I think it was seven. You might be right, but that really sent a definitive message, not only to him but to the entire group, that, you know, enough's enough, and we have to actually deliver, and we have to set higher standards than we've had. And
yep.
I think it was a real flashpoint. So I don't know. Look, I'm a bit soft on crime, Kev. I'm not, you know, I think he can get over draconian about these things, but I would have thought Port, being where they are, they really need to send a message to everyone to say, look, we are a decent side, and after, you know, two pretty disappointing years, we're going to prove it again. So that's not a great start.
So you'd give a different fine for someone at a club with a good culture. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying if the club has a strong culture and someone transgresses like that, you perhaps don't have to slap them on the wrist as hard, you know.
But this is done, this almost gets me into the Glenn Maxwell thing too. This is done by the leadership group for this young man. Now, it's gone public that what happened.
Mm.
But should the penalty go public, or should they not turn around and say, okay, you know what's going to happen? You're not going to get picked for 5 weeks in the senior team.
And don't bother telling anyone.
And we're not going to tell. We're not going to tell the press.
But we're going to say
that's what we're doing, because the only people that need to know how harsh we're being and how seriously we treat this and how we want to change the culture of this club is this group of blokes sitting in this room right now.
Yes, but I don't think you can do that in a modern media environment, because if you don't pink Jarman Impey for the first 5 games, everyone just goes, well, they put two and two together, and you just end up making it more of a story. This way, it's transparent, it's dealt with, and by the time he is eligible for selection again.
So all those people who've said in the last couple of days that the Glenn Maxwell thing should have been handled in-house, that's a preposterous, ridiculous argument, because you can't do that anymore.
I don't know, I can't remember if I said that, but by in-house, I think he should have had his gripe in-house. I don't think the penalty.
I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. See, it's,
he shouldn't have gone to the press. I said to Dean Jones before. Do you go and talk to Adam Dale? Sorry. Do you go and talk to your coach? Do you go and talk to the skipper, or do you go and talk to the press? Well, clearly, option C is not the one you should take.
No, exactly. I was going to bring this up actually because it's a real. I think it's a real bind for the media. This, and it superficially, it does seem quite hypocritical how we sort of whinge about the lack of characters in a sport.
Yes.
And then when they do show character, we sort of slap them down.
But that's not character that he showed there.
Who are we talking about?
Maxwell.
No, I agree. And that's what I'm saying. But that's how some people have been...
That's petulant behaviour, to be honest.
Yeah. That's how some people have interpreted it. They've said, they've framed it as that argument. And I would argue, as you are, that it's different. Yeah, it's being petulant, and you can show plenty of character and flamboyance and colour and whatever without sort of transgressing the sort of fundamental team ethic, which I think Glenn Maxwell did.
Well,
I still think having said that a fine and then a de facto omission from that first one day.
I don't think you can fine anybody more than $5,000.
Has anyone spoken about him not playing on Sunday and to what extent that was motivated by the incident? Because I find that interesting.
Mm.
See, I think the penalty imposed on him was probably a bit heavy-handed. I'm not sure if that means I'm having my cake and eating it too, but he shouldn't have done what he did. But I think in the realms of offences, it was a lower end of a scale. I'm not sure they needed to fine him necessarily.
Who, Maxwell?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
It's a fairly nuanced argument, Kev.
I think Darren Berry said this morning, don't fine elite sportsmen because it means nothing to them because it's chump change, pocket money.
Oh, no, that's true. Well, but tennis is the best example of that. I mean, it's like a big lunch.
So someone like a Jordan Impey, $5,000 probably will impact him a bit.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah. No, he'd be on the lower end of the wage scale.
Happy to take your calls on this, 94291116, or your text thoughts, 0433981116. You know the one thing we don't know? I'd love to know if Glenn Maxwell did go through the channels first about what his grievance was, which was batting below Matty Wade in the Shield team.
Yeah.
Whether he did go to Andrew McDonald or whoever and say, hey, boys, can we address this?
And got no joy.
And got no joy and then went to the press, which I don't like either, but I'd like to know if he did that first.
I would too, but now he's in a bind where if he comes out and it, let's pretend that did
he
happen.
He can't talk to the press now.
He can't now come out and say, well, I did. He should have said that at the time.
No, because that'll be a compound fracture.
Yeah. It's a difficult argument. You know, I heard your start this morning and that whole discussion about gender and we're going to talk to Fiona Richardson. And it was a really, the talkback calls were great, Kev.
Yeah, I agree.
You must elicit a really high level of talkback or something. But no, it was very interesting discussions and I've got a particular view on it. But even like the people who rang in with a view that didn't agree with mine, it sort of made me think, yeah, you're right. I can see your points.
I thought they were valid on air.
It's not often that happens now,
well,
is it?
Well, can I just say, and that's what I wanted to do with that, I have my personal opinion, which is I don't agree that there should be mandatory limits. I never have, not with any of that sort of stuff. But I'm quite happy to sit here and listen to points of view that have different things, and they made some really good points about it.
Conciliation, Kev. You're like the Bob Hawke
Open
of Talkback.
Debate.
You're like the Bob Hawke of Talkback Radio. Remember when Hawke got elected? It was all about conciliation. We've got calls about Maxwell Nippy. Let's get to them.
All right. Tim's in Broadmeadows. G'day, Tim.
G'day, guys. Just a quick one on Glenn Maxwell. You're questioning whether or not the decision not to play him was a part of his misdemeanor, as we'll call it.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to be a theme this morning, getting corrected if we're wrong. But correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't he left out of the Australian team recently? I mean, he hasn't really got the runs on the board. We all know that he's got the talent. There is no question about the talent. I mean, so does Nick Kyrgios. But, I mean, has Glenn Maxwell really shown, as of late, has he really put many runs on the board? Has he really put his name up in line to be picked? Personally, I don't think he has.
Look, that's a fair contention. Look, right off the top of my head, I couldn't cite
I don't know
what his recent one-day record is, but I think by and large...
Would I pick him in the one-day side for Australia almost every day of the week? Yes.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, I think... Wouldn't you, Tim?
Look, like I said, he has...
First game of a three-game series against New Zealand at the SCG. Wouldn't G. Maxwell be one of your in your 11, surely?
Well, look, as of late, I would probably leave him out.
Okay.
Purely because, like any sport, you got to pick people on form, not just on talent.
Yeah, okay. No, that's a fair point, Tim. We'll take that one. And someone's going to get a $100 voucher from creatorwool.net.au during these phone calls.
Although we're not... That team we picked for the last test wasn't necessarily a team picked solely on current form, was it? Because otherwise someone like Maxwell might have been in ahead of Maddison.
Yes, no, Maddison's form wasn't warranting a test selection. Based purely on runs.
Again, the constant switching between formats is a real worry.
Oh, trying to keep your stats head on. Was Maxwell in the team that went on the South African tour? I don't think he was.
They left a few behind.
Yeah, Rod's in Sunbury. G'day, Rod.
Kevin, look, in relation to the Jared Impey affair, I disagree strongly with punishing players who have broken the law of the land by the club as well. I mean, that's what they call double jeopardy. If someone breaks the law of the land, the law will deal with it. There's no need for the club to then go and fine them and rub them out of games in addition to that. That's why we have laws of the land. If a player breaks club rules, then I don't have a problem with some sort of sanction being applied
by
but the
Rod,
club.
Rod, I'm sorry to shoot you down, but one of the club rules would be don't break the laws of the land.
Well, another...
I'd be very surprised to see a club rule actually says that, Kevin. Really would be. I mean,
if not written down in stone, I would imagine implied in every way that you could think of.
What about Rod, the often fairly slow turn of the justice wheel? I mean, you know, if there's like someone's going to come up in court and there's a 6-month delay in that, I mean, what do you do in the meantime?
Well, that's our legal system, Rowan, and that's how it works. And there's no reason why footballers should be treated any differently to any other citizen. But when we apply a club sanction too, I also disagree with them rubbing a player out or suspending them from games. I mean, that punishes the team, it punishes the club, it punishes supporters, it punishes sponsors. All it does is weaken the team. I don't see the sense in that at all.
And, Rod, I've heard Kevin Bartlett say it a million times on this radio station, if Jarman Impey was the number 2 player on your list, not the number 32 player on your list, would the same thing have applied for his ineligibility for the first game of the season?
Well, that's why I think the Steve Johnson thing with Geelong was a real sort of game changer, because he,
absolutely,
on talent, was one of their best handful of players, and they were strong enough to say, you know, that's not good enough. We need to set higher standards. So, yeah, I've probably changed my mind on that one a bit. You know, I think a few years ago I might have said, no, it's too heavy-handed. These days I'm more inclined to think, you know, if you're trying to drag a group of 40 players with you, you've got to have higher standards than Jarman Impey pursued on Saturday night, you know, having a few too many and going out and playing dodgem cars with, you know, outside Angus Monfrey's house.
Thanks, Rod, for your call.
How do you reckon Angus was feeling with his neighbours the next morning?
Not good.
Sorry, Jack, you know, sorry about that Mercedes-Benz.
Mark's in Perth. G'day, Mark, obviously listening to us online or on the app.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Love it. I can't believe that you're comparing the two. You know, one guy, Glenn Maxwell, has said a few words. Another guy has got in a car drunk and had an accident.
No, we're not comparing that. No, we weren't comparing that. We were comparing the fact that they were both sanctioned by the leadership groups of their respective teams that they were representing. That was what we were comparing, because they are similar. We're not comparing someone who's gone out and banged into cars with someone who said something to the press. We weren't comparing that, Mark. That's not right.
Comparing the fines and the, you know, loss of gains and that sort of thing between the two.
Yeah. The imposed sanctions by their leadership groups. Yeah, we were.
Yeah, but hang on. That's the similarity. We're not for a moment saying this one's right and that one's wrong. I'm sorry, Mark, but that's what they call a false equivalence.
Mark, you want to make...
miles apart.
Yeah.
Miles apart.
Yeah, we agree with you.
Yeah, no, we're with you on that.
The only thing in common is that they're both players who've been effectively sanctioned by a leadership group. Yep. We're not saying they're similar incidents, Mark. Do you get that?
Yeah. No, I understand that. You're not comparing the two on how bad they did, but what I'm saying is that you can't compare... You know, their sanctions have both, you know, in the end, ended up being fairly similar by the sound of things.
Yep.
But, you know, how can they be? They need to be miles apart.
Okay, you're effectively saying that Impey should have got a heavier penalty than he's got, right?
And look, you know what you've been saying about how, you know, you can only fine them a maximum of 5,000 and you shouldn't, you know, suspend them because it affects the whole team. Make them do 100 hours of community service at a, you know, for underprivileged or something like that. That's what hurts these guys because that's taking their own time away from them.
Well, he will sort of because he's the $5,000 sanction will go to the Brain Injury Network of South Australia. And I think also both the two boys, both Jarman Impey and Aidan Johnson, have to then be involved in the programs that they run as well. So that is part of it.
Could
Thanks
go to a driving school as well.
Yeah, that wouldn't hurt. Thanks, Mark, for your call. A bit of the old Jim Murcott defensive driving school should come in there. Richard, David, Darryl, Michael, we'll get to your calls after the break. 9:49, 11:16. Ryan Connolly's in the studio with me here at 11:16 SEN. 11:30 here at 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. It's not often we back up our opinions with facts, but Rowan's actually found some statistical evidence why Glenn Maxwell shouldn't be in the one-day side.
Well,
Tony's
just sent through an SMS saying Maxwell made 160 not out against Sri Lanka this year. I don't know if I'm calling up the wrong figures here, but I've got his one-day stuff off Crick Info. And according to this, the last one-day he played was June of this year. He made 96 against India last summer, and he made 41 against India also a few days later. Since then, according to this, in his one-day appearances, he's had 0-6, 0-3, did not bat, 46 not out, and 4.
Sounds like me in my last year at Hobbs.
Look, if any, I'm happy to be corrected on that. I just did a very... I find Crick Info stats a bit confusing at times.
I find stats confusing. I'm not good at stats. All right, Tim, hope that settles it and backs your story up there about Glenn Maxwell. Let's get to Richard in Thornbury. Hi, Richard.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, Maxwell made 145 not out off about 60-odd nuts in Sri Lanka in the last 2020 game he played.
Oh, 2020, yeah, sorry. I was talking about 50 overs.
Yeah, I think the clearest indication of whether or not Maxwell was left out via disciplinary or selection was if he plays today. Marnica's a belter of a deck. We're going to want to take the pace off it, and it's going to be huge scores, and he can be the difference between sort of, you know, 3-3-10 and 3-70. He's the best fielder in the world all round, and, you know, if he comes in for Cummings today, there'll be a clear indication that, you know, they've left him out for the horses, of course, and not for disciplinary.
Yeah.
Do you know, that actually raises a good point, Kevin. Good point, we were talking about it off air, which is the relationship between the three formats. Now, Maxwell makes 160 in a T20. You think, well, obviously that's relevant to 50-over cricket, more so than to Test cricket. But I've got a bit of a theory that, you know how a while ago when T20 became so popular and everyone was saying 50-over cricket's dead, you know, it's redundant.
Yes.
I don't think that's the case. I think it's sort of come back in terms of credibility and popularity, mainly because the gap between 50-over cricket and Test cricket, I think, has shrunk. I don't think it's as big as what it was, and that's probably because Test cricket has played more aggressively now.
Yes.
But watching that one-dayer on Sunday, you know, Steve Smith makes 150 off about as many balls. I mean, you can do that in a Test cricket now. That's not necessarily that unusual now. It's a long enough format, I think there's a closer resemblance to Test cricket. Yeah, it's only 100 overs, but some tests now probably, how long do they last? Yeah, 2.5 days.
If you're lucky.
So, and I think that's got a bit to do with it, whereas I think there's a credibility too with things like the World Cup that T20 probably still doesn't have. You made a good point before off-air, which is people aren't embracing T20 at international level.
Yeah, I don't
it's
think
still
they have
a bit
yet.
Of a novelty.
I think that is still a novelty. I think the Big Bash is the shop window, the Myers Christmas window of T20 cricket, and then the rest of it is not taken on by anyone else yet.
So by extension, if Glenn Maxwell is at some stage, you know, if he is to get back in at Test level, and he's really had a very limited run, and it was a disaster.
Yep.
But he needs to be in that 50 over side, not the T20 side.
More so, yeah. Absolutely. More so. The other thing that I reckon has happened with the one-day internationals, the 10 or 15 dead overs is shrinking. It's now becoming about five overs where there's no...
Not much happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was 15 overs before. Now it's down to around about five. David's on the road. Hi, Dave.
How you going, boys?
Good, thanks.
Now, look, I don't agree with the way Maxie did come out at the conference. However, what I don't think has been discussed enough is that he was left out of the first Shield game for the year, and the Australian Cricket Board virtually told Victoria they have to play him. And obviously, and they had an eye, I think, for probably the Sri Lanka tour. So, in a way, you can understand the argument that, he's probably feeling, he's getting support from the Cricket Board to perhaps get into the Test side, and then he's not being supported. Now, I just wonder in these days whether the captain should have a say over the batting order, especially when he's got a conflict of interest himself in trying to get into the Test side.
Well, I think it's been more of a problem when the captain hasn't had so much say. You know, those debates we've had over the years about, you know, the captain not having his side out there.
And now we've had that debate about Steve Smith, that this is his team.
Yeah,
apparently.
No, that's true. That's true.
The one with Maddinson and Renshaw, and that is his team. David, this all goes back to the start of before the start of the season, when Glenn Maxwell tried to go to New South Wales to play Shield cricket in New South Wales, and that was knocked back.
What's interesting, David, if you're still there, I remember when he got made 12th man for that first Shield game, but I don't recall the conspiracy theory surrounding that emerging
team
then.
Balance.
It's only been since this last one's blown up.
No, there was a lot of people asking the
saying that it was because
how could he not be in the best 11 for Victoria?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
It's probably in the top three most talented batsmen in the country. We just got to get someone to coach him how to, play the longer game better. Let's try to get the best out of people rather than try to argue statistics why they shouldn't be there.
Yeah, David, comes back to what Dean Jones said this morning. He needs a mentor. He needs someone that he can sit down and get his head straight, because we all know how much talent he's got.
I think that's a bigger problem than people perhaps recognise, because Dave Warner has done it spectacularly well, but how many other guys who have sort of first appeared as short-form specialists have successfully transitioned to the longer form of the game?
Aaron Finch hasn't.
Well, he hasn't.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the names off the top of my head that come straight in and you go straight out again.
James Faulkner, I don't think has.
And not to become a permanent member of the Test side.
Correct. So isn't that an issue?
Yeah, well, it is. And you could name Chris Lynn and Travis Head and a whole stack of blokes who haven't made that transition, who've been excellent players in the T20 format. Yeah, I don't know. Thanks, David. Good call. In fact, David's in line to get that createawall.net.au voucher.
You run out of Batokis. You gave away about 63 in that first 30
David
minutes.
David can have a Batoki as well. Michael's in Geelong.
Now, just quickly, I took a Batoki home a couple of weeks ago, and we're still making our way through it, Kev.
Beautiful.
Breakfast, lunch, and tea.
Oh, I love ham.
Ham cereal.
Oh, I love ham cereal. Michael's in Geelong. Hi, Michael.
How you going, guys?
Good, thanks.
On the Impey situation, everything has to be taken into account. His dad just died recently, and he's already down and out.
I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
no, I did read that, okay. And that's fair to point that out, Troy.
Yep.
And also on the Maxwell, I think it's the other way around. Wade's being selfish. He's putting himself ahead of a batsman. That's not cricket.
Yeah, gee, no, I haven't heard anyone put that point.
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah, because, I mean, Maxwell's got the superior average at this stage.
Well, let's face it, the only way Glenn Maxwell's going to get in the Australian team, it's not as the all-rounder. He's not getting the all-rounder spot. He's going to have to make it as a batsman who happens to bowl a bit. He's going to have to get the number six. The Nick Maddison spot is going to be the one that he's going to have a crack at.
Well, it appears like for the moment we've sort of put aside the we have to have an all-rounder theory.
Thank goodness for that.
Well, they've got to be good enough, don't they?
Well, absolutely. Now, I'm going to give the $100 voucher for createawall.net.au for your office, boardroom or your man cave to David on the road. Could be for your car, David. I suppose you can create a wall there if that's all you got going. So good luck with that. And also, we won't give this one to David. We'll give this one to Richard in Thornbury. Thanks to Zambrero Mexican Restaurants, you've won the all-new Zambrero Power Burrito.
I had one the other week, Kev.
I know. I heard you say on the air. I heard Mark Allen talking about them too.
They're a powerful little number.
Made with a black rice tortilla, which is exclusive to Zambrero. And, of course, with everyone that you buy, Zambrero provide a meal to someone in need, so you get to feel good on the inside and on the inside.
I had one of those power burritos, and then I went for a cheeky dart afterwards. I didn't even have to pull out the lighter, Kev. I just breathed on it. Instant ignition.
Beautiful. No, I went down there at before Christmas when they were doing the packaging up all the meals that they do.
Oh, so we were down at Melbourne Union.
Yeah, we were too.
Great
That's
day.
You were there.
Good times.
Oh, those were the days. No, they do a great job. Good on you, Zambreros. And thank you to createawall.net.au. More with Rowan after the break. It's 20 to 12 here on 11.16 SEN. 16 to midday here on 11.16 SEN. Melbourne's home of sport. Kevin Hillier here. Hopefully, finally be back for his sake tomorrow. Hopefully, with a throat and a voice and all the things that go with that. Britt Phillips is here after midday. Ryan Connolly's in the studio with me. 9429 1116 or 0433 98 1116. But put you onto a new cricket stats place to go, howstats.com.
Yeah, I'll give that a go. Well, I mean, I'm not having a crack at Crick Info. I think it's a pretty amazing site all up. But some of the stats stuff isn't necessarily that user-friendly. I want to go back, Kev.
Oh, he's pointed his finger at me.
Sorry, it's
trouble,
just like I'm animated. I don't know if what our callers think, but I'd be interested to hear that whole thing about the three forms of the game. And has 50-over cricket sort of got closer to Test cricket than perhaps 50-over cricket now is to T20 cricket? Yeah. But also that thing about the transition. The more I think about it, the more I think that is cause for concern, that there's been too many players who have emerged first in the short form of the game for Australia who haven't been able to carry that over into the Test arena. And that, you know, whatever you say about the health of Test cricket or whatever, that is still our number one priority. And if we've got guys that can't make that jump, I think that's a real worry for the health of our Test team and our performances. And really, tell me if there's others that I'm missing. But to me, Dave Warner is about the only one I can think of who has emerged first in the short form.
And what's our biggest criticism of David Warner as a Test player?
Oh, that he's too rash with his stroke. But yeah, you're right. But I mean, he to a degree, he's been able to rein that in and find the right balance. But the names you cited, I think, were really interesting. Aaron Finch, I mean, I've watched some of his knocks at one day level and T20 and thought...
He can't get a game for Victoria.
Yeah, I know. And it's sort of a...
Chris Lynn's another one that comes straight off the top of my
head. It's a tragedy in a way because you see them play T20 and 50 over and think, wow, this guy could be anything, but they can't carry it forward. And surely that's going to impinge on our Test performances.
All right, hang on. I'm dragging my soapbox out because this will be my summer soapbox.
Yep.
Is technique, batting technique. Yep. And I talked to Dean Jones about it earlier with his new book that he's got out. But we've got to get back to the batting technique. And the illustrations I used were Dean Jones, and you could probably find about another half dozen of them, and left-handers, Adam Gilchrist. Did not stray too far away from actually playing the ball technically, if you want to call it that, properly, and invented shots. Not these trick party shots.
Ramp shots and stuff.
All that
yeah.
sort of stuff.
And if you're talking about guys who've emerged first in the short form and then transitioned into Test cricket successfully, who's the one before Warner? Probably Adam Gilchrist.
Yeah.
And that's now talking about 15, more than 15 years ago.
Which is a worry. Now, we earlier today talked about a story that's on the Herald Sun today on page 9 that caught my eye about the gender equality strategy that was launched yesterday. And it was launched by the Minister for Women and the Prevention of Family Violence, Fiona Richardson, who joins us on the line now. Hello, Fiona.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for joining us. Now, we had a bit of a talk about this on the radio this morning about the mandatory mandating of a minimum amount of women's sports coverage on public broadcasters. Now, are you shooting for 50% as your ultimate goal here? And what is the minimum that you want to set to when this policy comes in?
Oh, look, I mean, 50% would be fabulous. But, you know, we know that at the minute there's only, you know, 7% of TV sports coverage, which is actually looking at women's sport. And, in fact, horse racing gets more coverage on TV than women's sport.
I like horse racing, Fiona.
Look, I do too. But, you know, what we know is that when we actually televise sport, as we did with the September game of the women's football game at the Witten Oval, there were 6,000 people that were there, but there are actually over 1 million people who watched the game. Now, I got two big brothers, and they are mad sports fanatics. And they tell me, as other sports fanatics do, it's not whether there's men or women who they get to watch. They enjoy the skill of the game. They enjoy, you know, close competitive contests and the like. And that certainly is borne out by what we see when, you know, women's sport is actually given an opportunity to shine.
But if you, Fiona, for instance, and I made this analogy earlier today, if you've got, say you've got whatever percentage you work it out to be, and to put the female sports, say it's the female netball goes on, and I'm just picking a sport out of random, and the men's basketball misses out because you can't fit it in because you have to have that equation. Where do you make that? If I'm a television producer, where do I make that? Where do I draw that line?
Well, what I'm suggesting to you is that netball, which of course is the largest sport in Victoria, largest yep. participatory sport in Victoria, it's not about, say, knocking off the basketball, but it might be knocking off another men's sport that isn't actually drawing the attention nor the participation rates. So, you know, if you're a TV marketer or a TV producer. I think if you were made aware, which is what this strategy in part is obviously trying to do, if you were made aware of the activity and the attention and obviously the, you know, the support that women's sport gets, then yeah, you'll go where the marketers will go and where the public are. And netball is one of those ones that, you know, when it is actually given a look in, it tends to blitz very many other, you know, male sports. Now, I imagine that, you know, someone like you and your program would like to see sport on the TV 24/7, you know, and all sports fans would like to see more sport. What we're saying is that there are plenty of sports fans who support women's sport who would, if given the opportunity, obviously, you know, want to see it on TV and in TV news and the like.
Sorry to chip in, Fiona. How fine a line is it in terms of pushing that agenda? Don't get me wrong here. I understand the need for sort of positive discrimination in a sense, but you need the PR campaign and you need the media on side. And it's very easy for certain elements of the media to play that sort of overly PC card and sort of get the Neanderthals coming out and saying, well, you know, what about white middle-aged men? So do you have to sort of hasten slowly in a sense whilst improving this?
About getting, you know, people like yourselves on board and talking about the issue. That, you know, no doubt, this isn't about ramming anything down people's throats. But it is, you know, for example, the World Game, so the International Women's World Game, and, you know, held in Canada and the like, that actually attracted the biggest viewing audience in the US in the ever, for any football. You know, any football that's been televised, 27 million people in the US actually watched it. 60 okay. million people watched it worldwide. So, you know, there are plenty of examples of, you know, where, you know, people like yourselves and others, you know, get on board and give it an opportunity. Then people, yeah, do tune in and then support women's sport. I mean, have a look at the rugby sevens, the Olympic team, you know, the women's Olympic team.
Oh, you got no argument with the rugby sevens. They were sensational, Fiona.
And that, you know, showing women role model sporting, you know, sporting achievements and women playing and doing well and flying the flag for Australia, you know, what we want to see is more of that. And I believe, and certainly the stats bear this out, that's what the public want to see as well. All right. If you've got only 7% of the total TV coverage on women's sport, I reckon we can do a bit better than that.
Yeah, 7% does seem a very, very low figure. Fiona, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.
Fiona Richardson there, the Minister for Women and the Prevention of Family Violence, with the Gender Equality Strategy that was launched yesterday, and we'll certainly hear more of. It's 7 to midday. We'll take a break, come back and wrap it up with Rowan Connolly here on Mornings on 11.16 SEN. 3 to 12 here on 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. We get some classic SMS messages here, and some of them, I know this is totally inappropriate. I'm aware of that, but I'm just reading out because this is what we have to sort of sort through. Let women get their own channel. I like horse racing. I like men's AFL. I don't like women's sport. And you're allowed to. You're perfectly allowed to have that as an opinion. That's fine. But whether that's, you know, I don't know that we can validate it, but you're allowed to have your own opinion.
There are some women's sport that I'm ambivalent about, but there are some I genuinely enjoy watching.
What Fiona mentioned, the women's rugby sevens during the Olympics was bloody riveting.
Yeah.
It was great watching, and that's what it should be based on, whether it's good to watch or not good to watch, but not on who plays it.
But exactly. My point only to that is that you wouldn't know that unless you'd had the opportunity to watch
it. No, very good point.
And this is why people constantly cite women's tennis. You know, they say, because that's really good.
Well,
but
I did this morning.
But we've watched women's tennis regularly on commercial TV all our lives, whereas other women's sport, we haven't.
Yeah.
And
no, you're right.
If that disadvantage is institutionalised to begin with, it's you can't just say, well, it should be equal, because it's not equal to begin with.
No, and our appreciation of women's tennis and how good they are at that sport has grown with the increased exposure. And as we've come to understand and appreciate it, the coverage has grown at the same rate, and that's what they should be doing with all these things.
Now, Kev, I have to point out, she was really interesting, Fiona Richardson, but as we signed off, she did call you mate.
What was that about?
Well, I think that, you know, like, if we're expected to show respect to politicians, it should work the other way. So next time I'm interviewing a minister of parliament, I will be calling them
mate.
Cobber.
Can you imagine if Finey had been here and she'd have called Finey mate? He'd still be going at her. What do you call her mate?
I'm not your mate.
Oh, would have been good. Thank you, Rowan, for coming in.
Geez, that went went very quickly, Cobber.
I just had a quick look at the thing and went, gee whiz, it's over.
Well, you know, we talk and talk and we just get wrapped up in it and lost. We didn't talk any music.
No, and we've had calls because we are advertising Classic Rock Radio 1377. When's the Kevin Rocco show starting?
Hey, our management.
We're straight up the stairs now.
We're waiting to take your call. I'll be the Captain Carl figure, though. I want to drive the Black Thunder, Kev.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.